This is continuing the interview with James Boyd on November 9th. Okay.
Now, there's a rule in the National Research Council that anybody who is appointed to a board or a commission may only serve for 3 years. They keep it turning over, so they keep it fresh. So they appointed me first for 3 years on the I can't remember the exact title of it now. There were three. One was the Materials Advisory Board,
yes.
National Materials Advisory Board. The other one was the Energy Board. The other one was the Materials and Energy Board. They changed them. So I was on boards supervising what the Academy would do. And we had to review and put a report out every year what the situation was and what studies were going on and what departments were asking for studies to put on. And those boards would decide what studies we'd undertake. And the staff would arrange for the contracts and so forth.
Well, let me be sure. You were on boards of both the Academy of Science and the Academy of Engineering.
No, I was a member of the Academy of Engineering. I got appointed to the Academy of Engineering in 19, I think of 67, wasn't it? And I was still a candidate, Air Copper A.
Uh-huh.
67.
Okay.
I sneaked in the back door. I couldn't get in there. I'm sure that I wouldn't. I've got the capabilities of the people on that committee.
Now, the Academy of Engineering was...
The Academy of Engineering and the Academy of Science was under the same umbrella.
Right.
It was started as the Academy of Science under Lincoln.
Mm-hmm.
And then during the First World War, it did a lot of work as the Academy of Sciences in helping with the scientific problems in the First World War. And similarly in the Second World War. And it began to be clear that the scientists were controlling the Academy of Sciences, and that much of the work that the National Research Council were doing, or the quests coming on the Academy, was engineering in nature.
Mm-hmm.
So some engineers who were members of the Academy of Sciences, and they formed the Academy of Engineering, and they decided to do it under the same umbrella as the Academy of Sciences. And there was a lot of opposition from the scientists. The engineers, nothing but money grabbing terrorists. And I came in the second or third election. So there weren't many members of the Academy when I came into it. I'm getting to be one of the oldest members of it.
It's interesting that war seems to be the big impetus in materials.
Absolutely.
Interest in materials.
Because they govern you. The fuel questions are enormous. Fueling the airplanes and the ships and the tanks and the guns and all these things. That's a very big issue. A very big problem. And then if you start shooting off ammunition, you're taking an awful lot of copper. And the wiring and things like this. So. You soon find out that, and that was the reason that I got brought into the government as a director of the Bureau of Mines, because Cap Krug, who had been chairman of the War Production Board after Nelson, this man up here,
mm-hmm.
Recognized how important mineral materials were to the national defense. And when he went over to the Interior Department, he was naturally in command of the Bureau of Mines and Geological Survey and the Public Lands Administration. So that it's when he put the pressure on me to go into the Bureau of Mines.
Mm-hmm.
I knew him, we worked together, and he had a lot of confidence on it.
Mm-hmm.
So
you were on three committees, all of the Academy of Engineering?
The National Research Council.
National Research Council.
The National Research Council is the working arm of the academies.
Oh, Okay.
They have the staff, or they have the that does the staff work for the commissions, which are members of the academies.
Okay.
And then the committees that are set up are controlled or supervised by these commissions.
And you began this committee work after?
Oh, it was right after the we had filed our report.
This
yeah.
Commission on Materials
yeah.
Policy.
Because it was 9 years that I was, I guess I was on two commission committees at once for what a while. But it was almost 7 or 8 years I served on these committees. And the last, or these, not committees,
Boards.
Mm-hmm. One would phase out and they'd put me on another one.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
In the meantime, I would serve on these committees which were studying specific questions. And occasionally I would be stuck with the chairmanship. One was a committee to, this was a congressional request. It was the money, the Congress put the money up for,
did the surface mining?
Legislative opportunities in the materials field. And I had some high-powered people, the steel industry and the copper industry, on that one. And we made a report and it didn't get anywhere. But there was this fellow in the Library of Congress that kind of sparked that. Then, near the end, when I was leaving, soon before I left Washington, well, a year or so before Washington, I was appointed as the chairman of the Committee on Surface Mining and Reclamation, which I've talked to you about before.
Yeah.
And that was even a more difficult problem than the commission was, because here we had the fight between the environments.
Mm.
And they told me that I'd never get a report out. And I had on the committee the executive director of the Sierra Club, and I had mining engineers and hydrologists and population people and all these, some top geographers and so forth on this committee.
Mm-hmm.
And this, and Ruth, by the way, was getting very ill at this time, so I didn't let her leave Washington very much.
Mm-hmm.
I had to have most of the meetings, and when I went, say I had to go to Chicago or something like that, I'd just go overnight. Then I had a nurse come and stay with him at home. But I never stayed away more than one night at a time. And that not too often. So,
must have been a very hard time for you.
Nevertheless, the fellow who was on the staff of the Research Council and was given to me to be the, I had three people from the staff there to help me with this one. They were quite convinced we'd never get a report.
Hmm.
You know, I'd never get the environmentalists and the mining engineers, the mining groups. And they had a meeting one time in which one of the vice presidents of the mining companies on the committee and the fellow from Sierra Club was on the committee. And I could see we were going to have real trouble, so I went to Chicago. That's one time I did go away from home. And I just sat and bumped their heads together. Made it pretty clear that it's extraordinarily important that we find a way to meet the legitimate requirements of the environmental questions and the requirements of industry to be able to produce the source of raw material.
Mm-hmm.
The result was that the report we put out is a unanimous report.
For heaven's sake.
No one believed we could do it.
No.
Now, I'm proud of that, but no one said anything I did.
You should be.
Yeah. Now, I remember the first meeting we had. There was a mining engineer who was a friend of mine from Connecticut, and the Sierra Club man.
Brower was?
No. It was after Brower. Brower, they run Brower out of there.
He's
gone out. He's still executive director.
I don't know who he is now.
I remember him a lot.
Who was the Kennicott friend?
The Kennicott man was Stan not the comic. It'll be in that report.
Okay.
And we'll let it go then. We'll fill it in. Michelson. See, I got a perfect memory. It's a retrieval system.
Well. Okay.
A little slow.
Stan
Michelson. And Stan jumped down Mike McCloskey.
Oh, yeah.
Down at Vital says, are you going to be working for the Sierra Club, or are you going to be working for you as a member of this committee?
Mm.
And I jumped down his face immediately. I said, if we can't hear this first meeting agree that we're going to be here as individuals and think only about the country as a whole, not about our specific organization, including Connecticut or the Sierra Club, we're never going to get a report out of here. Now, what do you want? We've been asked to get a report. So I guess it was a warning of the staff that made me say that.
Mm-hmm.
And after that, I never had any real trouble, except that I could see it coming up in Chicago. So I made a point of going down there and getting into it.
Mm-hmm.
But I had some wonderful people on that committee.
Mm-hmm, sure.
Two or three of them were members of the Academy of Engineering. And probably some were members of the Academy of Science. I know there would be.
Mm-hmm.
And they're the ones that put the report out. So, now where are we?
Now, well, what happened to this report then? Did this have...
Oh, this then report was submitted to the Commission on the Council of Environmental Quality.
Mm-hmm.
And our recommendation in there was that there was no need to any more legislation, environmental legislation in this field.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the environmental legislation was there. If it was properly managed and handled, there was all the legislation you need. The Carter Commission gave in. The Carter administration gave in to that. They accepted the report. The commission accepted the report. It was turned up on the Hill, and even the people like Stu Udall down in the,
mm-hmm.
Mo Udall, that's Stu's brother,
mm-hmm.
Accepted it. And there haven't been any attempts to go any further on service mining, more legislation on service mining since then.
Hmm.
So I became a hero of the mining industry. Yeah?
Mm-hmm. It was effective.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
So we that was the purpose, to see whether there was more legislation needed.
Mm-hmm.
And we convinced them that there was. And we had the approval of the agreement of the Sierra Club.
Mm-hmm.
That means the Sierra Club had to go work through the places they got now, instead of getting more legislation,
mm-hmm.
which they always did, you know. They fought for legislation.
Mm-hmm.
But they didn't, that's the trouble with the department that runs the and takes care of the environment now. No.
EPA?
Yeah. Environmental Policy.
Protection
Agency.
Agency.
That's
right.
And so they always have to battle in this thing. And in the early days, they had an awful lot of environmentalists who really didn't understand the scientific aspects of the environment. And they came up with all these kind of weird things, and they did a lot of damage to the mining industry.
Oh, yes, indeed.
And but this man who resigned and did a nice job for Eisenhower. No, it was who did he come in? The last commissioner, head of the department. He was in twice. He was the first one.
Department of the...
The EPA.
Oh, EPA.
When Jerry Claff and I started out getting the commission going, we knew what our problem would be.
Mm-hmm.
EPA was just set up. We went over to see this man.
Hmm.
And he was barely at his feet under the table yet. The building was a mess and so forth. But we were able to get them to send people in and take part in this, mm-hmm. in the commission report.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't have confrontations with environmental
mm-hmm.
people.
Mm-hmm.
We would then sit down with them and see whether it was possible to do what they wanted to do
mm-hmm.
from an environmental cause and what damage it would do to the rest of the economy.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know, you don't know how much really influence you have over these things when you get into a mess like Washington. You have an influence. You affect people's minds. I told you that when the chairman of the Environmental Quality Commission went and reported that I would be the chairman, the two senators who I'd never met said, "You'll get a good report."
Mm-hmm.
And we got it, and we got a report they could use.
Mm-hmm.
So, and did use. I mean, they just didn't give up fighting it. Even Mogudo quit. And nothing's been done about it. And it didn't have to be done. You've got all the registration you need. Just go put it to work.
Mm-hmm.
Now that was I was getting from near the end of 70 for that. I was getting. Then I got on.
Oh, that must have been 70.
No, the end of the 70s.
Okay,
yeah.
Right.
Because I remember I left there in 79 to come out here.
Mm-hmm.
But just before, a year or so before I left, my man who has been a research director for Crucible Steel and been my research director up at White Pine was made chairman of a committee to study the Titanium Committee. And in knowing that I knew a little about titanium because the Bureau of Mines actually brought titanium into commercial use, and there were companies set up to mine, and without it we couldn't have the jet engines today. We couldn't have the kind of planes we have today. Although some things were replaced titanium, it's very difficult for a new material to get, particularly when it's expensive. It costs about $7 a pound.
Mm.
It ain't cheap.
No.
And so we went around all over the country seeing the plans and talking to the president, and they were trying to get this and that done. And I would sit down and argue with them, even though I was always reporting a thing. I said, "Do you really want to do this by government action, or do you want to work it out from the economic position for enterprise?" And I talked a lot of them out of trying to do it from going in and getting legislation to give them support and supporting each other.
Where is titanium produced?
Well, titanium is a common metal in the Earth's crust. It combines with oxygen, and once it's combined, it's all hard to break it loose. So it occurs in two minerals, rutile, which is TiO2, and ilmenite, which was FeTiO2. That's not quite right, but it's iron titanium oxide.
Mm-hmm.
Kennecott had a big titanium mine in Quebec. I went up and visited a couple of times. And we had a smelter there, which we separated the iron from the titanium, and today they're doing very well. I don't know who's got it anymore. When they sold Kennecott to the oil company, they spun that one off and it's doing very well. They got a name for it. The greatest use for titanium really is not in making metal, but in making white pigment, which used to be a lead oxide,
mm-hmm.
is now almost all titanium oxide. So when you separated it from the iron up in this deposit up there, you came out as a white titanium oxide.
Mm-hmm.
And then you could take it down and take the TiO2 and then treat it with this process the Bureau of Mines worked out and brought it into the metal.
Mm-hmm.
And that's done, that's an expensive operation. So in order to get the titanium I showed you in my letter opening, came through that process that shows the salt and the titanium coming out of the salt.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all done in a vacuum at high temperature and extremely pure atmosphere.
Mm.
So that's rather expensive, but If it saves things made, an airplane made of titanium rather than the iron, where it was in steel or things like that, will save in fuel in a year or two. What is the difference in cost of putting it in there? So that's why you have to have it, why you do have to have it today. And that came out of the research in the Bureau of Mines. As manganese, making metallic manganese, too, and that's used in a lot of alloying of steel, things like that, and synthetic fuels. And towards the end of the time, I was at Bureau of Mines, and during the Korean War, we had suggested that we should get a plant going to make. We needed a chemical, not methane, butane. I can't remember what it was, but anyway, we could make it from coal through this process as the Bureau of Mines had worked out. And my friend Ferd Eberstadt had been working, had gone back to New York. And I talked with him and the Secretary of Interior, and we got them to put together a group that would put up the money to build this plant. And they'd have to get government help in order, because it's a new process. Well, in the meantime, the oil industry solved the problem. They moved their production is around in the oil refineries, and they were able to provide this stuff pretty quickly. And it just wasn't sensible in wartime to go and be spending that money. So I called Ferd up and I said, Ferd, I want you to be the first. I'm going to have to say to the Secretary that we shouldn't go ahead with this up to now. And he took it, but the Secretary stuck his neck out. And I think that's one reason I got fired.
From the DOM?
No. From the Defense Minerals Administration.
Oh, right.
They didn't dare fire me from the Bureau of Mines.
No. From the Defense Minerals.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Because the Secretary could do that. He appointed me as the Defense Minerals Administrator, but the President appointed me as the Director of the Bureau of Mines. Mm-hmm. And after all the fuss he'd been through, they knew they weren't going to get by him on that.
No.
So I just, when the Undersecretary didn't tell me, but he suggested that I resign. I said, well, let me think it over. And I went off on vacation, the first vacation I'd had since I'd been there. And in the meantime, they asked me to come up to Freeport and see if I'd come onto their staff or announce the new sulfur deal for them. But I fought in the Congress to get them off that back so they could the industry could solve the problem. And the Secretary Chapman was out in Japan. When he came back, they'd written this order undoing all I had done in the Defense Minerals Administration. So I went out of town. They didn't hang his hang up. In the meantime, Kennedy had offered me my job, so when Secretary got back, I took this thing into it. I said, you know, you and I worked on this darn thing. This is the Defense Minerals Administration. It's working very well. And now they want to undo all this to it. He said, what do you want me to do? I said, tear it up. So he tore the darn thing up. And I said, well, now, Oscar, I've got to resign. If you haven't got any confidence in me and your department here, then it's time that I resigned as Director of the Bureau of Mines. And so I did. Right there, I wrote him and the President had to write me a letter of acceptance.
Mm-hmm.
It was a presidential appointment. It wasn't a secretary's appointment.
You haven't said anything on the tape about Watergate. The Watergate incident. Do you want to say anything about that? You were living there.
We were living in the Watergate South, and if I looked around the corner of my balcony, I could see the office building in which the Democratic officers were, you remember, for the election. And
I think you said that you knew both Haldeman and Ehrlichman through
the Well,
church.
I met them because I had talked to them on the telephone because they probably don't even remember me. But
did you know them at church? You said they were both
No, I didn't know them.
I see. I thought perhaps you
As a matter of fact, I wasn't attending church at this time. I was too busy to do anything.
I see.
Ruthie had taken them back into the Divine Science Church and because she thought the doctors weren't supported by the Christian scientists, which was quite contrary to the truth. I mean, we have great respect for the Christian scientists, great respect for doctors, because some people can't see their way through to use Christian science.
So she was not attending Christian Science Church?
No, she was the doctor's daughter. And, She'd come and occasionally go with me.
Mm-hmm.
Got a nice little story about him. I love to sing Onward Christian Soldiers.
Mm-hmm.
And one time there was a Esquire came out with a, you don't want this on the report.
Why not?
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay, he came out with a open spread in the middle of not Playboy, but what was it?
Esquire.
Had two surplus priests playing the organ, and it said underneath, "Swing it, Reverend Hotchkiss, swing it." So I took Ruth to church one night, and we had played Onward Christian Soldiers one day, and I was getting up in full voice, and she leaned over and she said, "Swing it, Reverend Hotchkiss." And then I squeaked, you'd hear all the children. I never took there again. No, I'm not going to say that. She did. But she didn't like to go. She would go to the Divine Science Church. Mm-hmm. And she took the boys when I was off so busy that she set up the Sunday school for them in Washington when we were there. Mm-hmm. And in that church. That was the beginning of that Sunday school.
Oh.
But when we got to Greenwich, when I got to Greenwich, I started them back in the Christian Science Sunday School, but then they began going off to school,
mm-hmm.
and that didn't last very long. Mm-hmm. And so none of the four of them are scientists.
Oh, really?
Hmm. But Timmy came there.
Mm-hmm. So you didn't really have any personal interest in the Watergate incident? You didn't know the people well enough to be interested in it?
I really didn't. It was a shock.
Well, of course.
To everybody. I mean, you probably knew more about it than I did. You know, it took place in the building next door to me. I was pretty busy.
Sure. Yeah.
And I still think that a great many things that Nixon did, which is will make him a good president.
Mm-hmm.
That little part of his character was a.
It was a flaw, wasn't it?
But we've all got flaws,
yeah. Sure. So that the last president that you worked under was Carter, then, I guess.
Well, I didn't work under Carter. I was working in the academy
when Carter was submitted.
Yeah,
to Carter.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
For
instance, I had a great the Interior Department by this time with. When we were doing the service mining thing, we were really no help to us. They had an assistant secretary of minerals as a young lady. I thought we got to be quite friendly, but she didn't know anything.
Mm-hmm.
She's perfectly useless. And we needed their help in those circumstances.
Yes, that's something that's changed in the field. You were working in an all-male field all of your career, weren't you?
Pretty well.
And it's not that way.
Well, I hired a lady geologist in Connecticut, mm-hmm. at least one. She went down to Brazil by herself in the jungles, and last I saw her, she was in Grand Junction in the uranium field.
Mm.
But I never had any function about sending her. We had lots of ladies in the graduates, and not lots, but some of them. In the inside work, but only one lady geologist, but that never entered in our minds anyway.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
There were a lot of lady geologists in the petroleum industry, for
yes.
instance.
Mm-hmm.
But now, of course, it's getting...
mm-hmm.
Caltech is getting concerned because they are not getting women applications to Caltech as much as they want. They want to... they've still only got about 10 or 15% women in Caltech, and they want more.
Mm-hmm.
But now they're trying to find out a way to how to attract them.
Mm-hmm. That's a switch, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, why did you choose to move to Carmel?
Well, the year I graduated from college, my mother and I came up through here as our last fling together. And we went up, drove up the coast into Carmel, went up to San Francisco, over to Tahoe, and then back down to Los Angeles. That was our last fling together. And I said when I came in here, it was dirt roads, you know, sand roads down the Carmel. This is the place I want to live someday. It took me 53 years to get here.
Wow.
But in the meantime, Brown was out here, and he loved California and his family. And Bruce had moved out to Los Angeles, working with Dashew Care Company.
Mm.
And and Doug was in Denver. I didn't look like Luthy should go up to high altitudes. So the boys made a thorough study of what you do in your old age. What kind of a... we sell our apartment in Washington, what are we taking this place? And they came to the conclusion Del Mesa was the best place to come to.
They researched it for you.
Oh, yeah.
That's interesting.
But we decided we wouldn't... they didn't want us to depend upon going to the manor or someplace like that. They didn't like being a Christian Scientist. If I
mm-hmm.
ever found the point beyond me, I could go up to Arden Woods in San Francisco, which was a lovely place.
Mm-hmm.
I took Clemmie and I spent 2 nights there,
mm-hmm.
even though she wouldn't agree that she couldn't drink a glass of wine or something like that. And, so when I suggested this, and Bruce was living in the forest, and Linda, the lady that Bruce was getting divorced from, had some connections through the church with a minister, and he brought Bruce and me up to see it. And so we agreed that's what we'd do. We'd buy a house here and move out here, and that each of the families would have a unit in their living quarters. Doug has a bath and bathroom and a bedroom on the garden level,
mm-hmm.
and near the big next door to a big family room. And so we would stay there. And she had one of the strokes there, by the way,
mm-hmm.
when we were coming back from somewhere. And Bruce built a big room onto his house up here, which is where his to-be ex-wife is living there now.
Mm.
And Brown has got it all planned out to add another room or unit, because
mm-hmm.
it would be room big enough to you live in and to sleep in and have a bath. Trying to go up to the manor.
No. Well, hope you won't have to.
They don't want us to. I don't think they realize that if one of us became ill enough that it couldn't take care of themselves, it'd be the burden falls on the wife.
Mm-hmm.
So Timmy and I are concerned about that.
Well, it's a tremendous concern to everybody now, I think,
yeah.
since...
But they're prepared. They said, we love you, we can take care of you. And if they've got a room there that they're not going to keep as far away as you can. But
now, what of your siblings? Are they, where did they, what happened to your brother? And
well, my brother died, he had a congenital heart problem all his life. When he had to take about 9 or 10 nitroglycerin pills a day, they decided it was time to operate. So, Mike DeBakey and Denton Cooley in Houston, the great surgeons in this field, and Stand Oil California paid for it. They took him in and severed all the nerves off his heart and did what other things they had to do to parry his plumbing. This is a congenital thing. And he went back to work, and they warned him that if he ever get tired, he'd immediately lie down, because he could have a heart attack and would never know what hit him. So he knew that his life could end quite quickly, and his first wife had died when he was in Maracaibo, in South America, and he married a girl from Houston, and she's still living. Girl, she had 3 children. One was a colonel in the Air Force, and he's retired now. So. Yeah, so then, well, he passed on, they kept him alive for 10 years, and he used to go up and climb up on he'd buy houses that had got the termites in them, strip them down, get rid of the termites, rebuild the places that need rebuilding, and he used to go up and climb the ladders and carry shingles on his back. And he had about 7 or 8 of these houses that he left to Glen Erie, his widow. I don't know what she's done. I think she sold them down and left the money elsewhere. Then my twin sisters, they were 6 years younger than I. And Betty had a very serious heart problem. And they finally had to perform a frontal lobotomy because the pain was so great. And she passed on in Johns Hopkins Hospital in Baltimore. And Margaret married a naval officer, and he retired and went to work up in the valley up here, near San Francisco.
So she came back to California.
She came back to California. They lived there, and they lived at Menlo Park. And,
So you were not the only one who returned to California.
That's why we all did, really.
You all did.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. That's interesting.
And although Bill's wife, his widow, she's gone back to Houston. She lives there.
But you and your brothers and brother and sisters all came back to California.
Yeah, so I'm the only one survived.
Oh, I see.
The naval officer and his wife, Margaret, died about 7 years ago. Within a month or 2. They were very close.
Before you came back here?
Yes, we were still in the Watergate. And we went up to, we invited them to come and have Christmas with us up in Michigan. And Bill died. He came home from a party and had a heart attack and just passed out like that. Now, they tried to tell me that she committed suicide because they found a bottle of sleeping pills, and empty sleeping pills in the kitchen. But if she'd taken any sleeping pills, it was because after this, having a drink or something like that. I'm sure she never would commit. So I talked to her every night after Bill died, so it was kind of comfort. And I couldn't get her to come in. But her brother-in-law, who lived near there, went by the house to see her, to take her to Christmas dinner. And couldn't stir up. They went down the back of the house and saw her lying in bed, dead. She'd passed out.
Oh, wow.
So, I'm the only one left the family. My four boys and Bill's, and my brother Bill's daughter and son
mm-hmm.
have a small family.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, there's still a good number of boys around, though.
Yeah.
Yep. Four sons. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, from what Dad brought over.
Uh-huh. And one of your sons is in Who's Who.
Is in what?
Is in Who's Who. James.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Brown, you call him.
Yeah, I call him Brown.
Uh-huh.
It's James Brown
James
boy.
James Brown boy. You have no middle name.
No, I used to have.
Uh-huh. You dropped it.
I dropped it.
So.
I think when I went to the Bureau of Mines, I was signed that name any longer than James boy.
That must be quite a thrill to have you and your son both in Who's
yeah.
Who.
Yeah, well, it is. I'm surprised. I'm surprised you never told me that, really.
Didn't mention it.
Never mentioned it. He wouldn't.
No.
He's a real scientist.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. And you just discovered it when you... Uh-huh.
Well, I looked him up in the... I've looked up my thing,
uh-huh.
my Who's Who. And,
there he was.
Yeah.
That's wonderful.
Now, where are we?
Well, we may have come just about to the end.
Yeah, what I was doing... When we left Washington to come out here, was on serving on this titanium committee for the Academy, and I was then appointed to the Engineering Review Committee group, Engineering Review Group, in the Office of Technology in the Office of Nuclear Waste Isolation in the Battelle Memorial Institute, who was under contract with the Energy Department. And I was attending their first meeting in Columbus, Ohio. When my son Bruce called me, that was a week after we came out here, and Ruthie was in the hospital. She didn't seem to be able to communicate at all, so I thought I'd better attend that meeting, and they told me she had passed on that night,
mm-hmm.
so I came right home and didn't attend that meeting. And I've been with that committee ever since. I'm still technical advisory committee was first, now it's the engineering review group.
Mm-hmm.
And I tried to resign last year because it was getting too much of a burden to go. I can't take these long night flights.
You said you went back 20 times in that.
That was the first year. That wasn't bad. I was able to take that.
But
it began to get, as I got a few years older, that was 7 years ago, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And the last year or two, it's those long trips,
they're
pretty hard for me.
But you are still on it.
I'm still on it. I want to resign. They said, we wish you wouldn't. Because
mm-hmm.
I've been reviewing everything they've done for the last 7 years. And it's a very interesting committee,
mm-hmm.
high-level people and different people, well-known people a professor of mining at Berkeley is a member of the committee. He's a one-time South African. He's now an American citizen.
Oh, yes.
And he's...
Morrison?
His name is...
Oh, I know, he's on our committee, too, on our advisory committee. Can't think of his name.
Lord. I'll remember a bit. Well, I can get it.
I know
enough.
He's on our advisory. Cook.
Cook, yeah.
Cook.
Yeah. He's on it.
Neville Cook.
Neville Cook.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's a wonderful man.
Yes.
And his wife, plenty get along very well.
Mm-hmm.
Then there's another one from the University of California out at Livermore. Tall John Epps. He used to work for Kennecott. Then there's a professor of hydrogeology from British Columbia, University of British Columbia. We have even Canadian now.
Hmm.
And that gives an interconnection of what the Canadians are doing in their waste disposal. And then there's a fellow from from Columbus at the university. What's the Columbia University in Columbus? Ohio State.
Ohio. Mm-hmm. Okay.
He's the one that knows more about materials. I mean, alloys and things.
Mm-hmm.
All the some complicated scientific stuff. Mm-hmm. So there are only five of us.
And you meet every...
Well, we meet. After I did this, the first meeting we had was up at Stanford. And the second meeting we had was down here in Carmel. And then they've had meetings in
Columbus. The mountain comes to Muhammad if necessary.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. In Vancouver. I wouldn't mind going to Vancouver. And I've been to Albuquerque. That doesn't take very many hours to get down there and get back. We've been twice, and then we've had them in Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
So they've been... But when they've had them in the... We had one in Nashville. Because the chairman of the committee... That's right, I didn't mention his name. He's the chairman. He's a professor of environmental engineering at Vanderbilt.
Mm.
It wasn't fair not to go to his place, so... I got called back to go to serve at a meeting of the Armed Forces University, which holds its meeting in the War College, and to talk about the mobilization in case of another need to mobilize. And while we were in Nashville, we went out and had somebody, both of us got a beautiful attack of tummy problems. But I sat through those meetings. And so we went and stayed in the Cosmos Club. That's the first time Clemmie had stayed in the Cosmos Club. Well, any women, really.
Mm-hmm.
But then that's as far away back we've been since then.
Mm-hmm.
Until we went around the world. But she went to Europe the first year we were married. We went down to Italy and then came back up to Germany. And then Brown and Susie and the children were a year in his sabbatical. We're over in the University of Munich.
Mm.
And they were, Randy and Pamela were going to German school, and so they speak German fluently.
Oh, nice.
Mm-hmm.
But they're back at Davis now.
They're both at Davis now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
She's a freshman and he's a junior, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I
think that's just about it. But
I think that's all.
Anything else?
I've been thinking. I was thinking today and yesterday. I was thinking about what we've been missing. But when we get a draft, then there'll be time
then
to see what's missing.
You can add things.
Things that are important.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll need references.
Yes, and some pictures.
Oh yeah, I don't know whether my camera's good enough. Last night I took pictures of the important awards,
right.
And I took the lamp down and took a picture of those.
Good.
And I took a picture of the Academy of Engineering and the two gold medals.
You didn't ever get any award for being director of the Bureau of Mines?
No, good for it.
Yeah, but not for serving.
Not directly, no.
No.
No,
everything else they give you,
no,
fancy pieces of paper for,
yeah.
But not that.
Well, I've got the appointments for the
sure,
directorship
sure,
of Bureau of Mines,
yeah.
If I can find them, I live up in the attic.
Which is the one that means the most to you?
The most to me?
Uh-huh.
Oh, I suppose the gold medal.
The Hoover?
The Hoover medal.
Or the Rand?
The Rand medal is strictly AIME.
Uh-huh.
The Hoover medal is from all the technical societies.
Mm-hmm.
There are three presidents and lots of very powerful people on that list.
The Hoover list,
yeah.
Right.
Much more than the other one.
Uh-huh. And of course you've got a gold-plated pan up here from Colorado.
Yeah, that's because I've done a lot of work for the Aluminum Alumni Association.
Uh-huh.
I wrote a letter for them that they raised a lot of money on.
And
I think that's what gave me that.
And you got distinguished something from Caltech, but...
Well, that's when I'm a distinguished graduate of Caltech.
Uh-huh.
And there are some very powerful people in that. I've got something to do for them.
Goodness.
Here, for example, are the awardees, since they've done it when I got it.
Distinguished alumni. Mm-hmm.
See, Frank Borman, next to my name there, was he was one of the astronauts. And Frank Capra,
mm-hmm.
The movie man, he graduated from Troop College as a chemical engineer.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
And
a lot of Nobel Prize winners are there.
Mm-hmm.
So we get invited to walk in the parade when they have a new inauguration of a new president.
Harrison and Schmidt.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Two astronauts. That's interesting,
yeah.
Isn't it? Uh-huh. And, oh, that's a distinguished list.
Then, of course, I'm a distinguished graduate of the Colorado School of Mines, too.
Also.
That's a silver medal.
And then you got this award from the state of Michigan, but you got an award from the University of Michigan, or Michigan School of Mines.
I got
a
doctor's degree. I did. I sang from the supper.
You gave
a commencement address.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And that was a doctor's award.
I've got three
doctor's degrees, you said?
Three doctor's degrees.
Uh-huh.
Here is the...
So you're doctor boy.
Yeah, I don't use it at all. But the Colorado School of Mines doctorate is on silver.
Ooh. Isn't that nice? A silver fly.
But that was earned.
That's the one you
yeah.
had to work hard for.
Yeah.
Doctor of Science. With all attendant rights and privileges. Mm-hmm.
And this is the...
There's Van Tuyl and...
This is the Michigan College of Mines and Technology, which is now Mexican Technological University.
That's in copper, appropriately. Another doctor of science.
Yeah, why they didn't give me a cop doctor of engineering. I am an engineer. I'm a brother of a scientist.
So it's two DSC, and the third one was a...
They both called them DSC. Oh, three of them, I guess.
All three.
This is a replica of the Rand Medal. That's in bronze.
The real one is in gold in the bag. James Boyd, 1963. But that was before you were president?
No, I was president of Copper Ranch.
But not yet president of AIME.
Oh, yes, before I was president of AIME.
You were given the Rand Medal before.
Yeah, I think I'm the last executive of a mining corporation to be the president of AIME. They don't do it anymore that way anymore. No. You come up for the societies. Now there's the American Institute of Mining of Professional Geologists, and that's Ben Parker, who were partners together.
And this is a memorial medal for outstanding service to the profession from the
AIPT.
American Institute of Professional Geologists, 1973. And that's your good friend.
Yeah, that was
very nice.
That's the best picture I have. I don't know where my his picture should be up there, but I can't find it.
Let's just quickly look. Pictures on the wall. We've got Eisenhower, lovely picture of Eisenhower. And this, who is this? Which one is that?
This one?
Uh-huh.
That's Cap Krug. Secretary of Interior, the Director of the Post.
Backlund.
That's Harry Truman.
President Truman. Two pictures of him.
And the two pictures of Clay. Somebody putting the medal on me. And this, we've had an earthquake, you know, recently. Gotten Cartwright again.
Who is that?
That's Robert Patterson, who was Under Secretary of War when he was the one that called me to Washington to activate my commission.
And that one that you...
This is Bill Draper.
General
Draper. He's most famous for family planning and internationally. He was the one that really got the United Nations to pass the great, organization or action that set up the freedom to help women in that situation.
Family. Who is this gentleman up there then?
That's Walker Sisler.
Yeah,
he worked with on my staff in Germany, and then I went on his board as a and he was chief officer of Detroit Edison.
So,
and I had to leave that board when I went to the commission.
Perhaps it was Draper's influence partly that I noticed in your, I guess it was the speech that you gave at Colorado School of Mines for the, was it when you got the Distinguished Alumnus Award? A paper that you gave me, a speech that you'd given at Golden, where you emphasized the fact that part of materials planning had to include population planning.
The 100th
The celebration. That's right.
Yeah.
Right.
And me and David Rockefeller, we gave a speech at that place.
Right. I thought that was an interesting expansion of your interest in materials and natural resources to include people as a natural resource.
Well, of course they are.
Yes, but they aren't usually listed as one.
I'm trying to think. Well, you've read the Hoover.
I read the Hoover and the.
Give her a cup of tea.
You have a cup of tea?
Well, we're stopping, I think, aren't we?
Yeah, we're about ready.